Hi, this is Jessica Marpey, and I am your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I am here with State Senator Judy Schwenk, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Schwenk or any of her guests, press star 3 at any time on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 to submit a question to tonight's discussion. Now, let's welcome Senator Judy Schwenk.
Hello and good evening, everyone. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you all for joining us this evening to talk about something I think we all think is really important. There seems to be more scams and fraudulent activity targeting people's personal information every day. But hopefully the panel and I can provide you with some tips about how you can protect yourself from scams and other forms of fraud. With the holidays about a month away and big shopping days like Black Friday and Cyber Monday just a week or so from now, although it seems like Black Friday has already started, I know people are going to be out there doing their Christmas shopping. With lots of money changing hands and people searching the internet for deals, I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to learn about what are some of the telltale signs that something's just not on the level. Just a few months ago, my office was able to help a constituent after $6,000 was wired from his bank account. It took some doing, but after a few weeks, the money was restored by the bank. You can imagine what a relief that was to the constituent. But that's just one example. Earlier this year, members of my staff had their information used to file false unemployment claims. Certainly, through the pandemic, it seemed like my office was getting more calls about fraud, identity theft, and scams than normal. And it just goes to show you, anyone can be a target. And elected officials aren't excluded from this either. I don't even want to tell you how many credit cards I've had to replace because the cards were hacked. It can happen to anyone. That's why I wanted to hold this event so we can talk everything from identity theft to credit card theft, as well as how the state protects, some of our social welfare programs from abuse. The group gracious enough to join us on this call has a wide range of experience, so I'm sure they'll be able to answer most of our questions. And if we don't have a great answer for a question asked, I'd ask that you follow up with my office after tonight, and we'll look into it. So let's get started and let's meet our guests. And I will start. Here's who we have with us this evening, Lucas Miller, who is the Pennsylvania State Inspector General. Good evening, Inspector General.
Good evening, Senator.
I know you're there. Thank you. Okay. John Adams, who is our Berks County District Attorney. Hi, John.
Good evening, and it's a pleasure to be here with everyone, and I hope that we can all educate all of us on this ongoing issue that affects many.
Right. And Sarah Frasch, who is the Chief Deputy Attorney General and Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection for the Commonwealth. So, that's our lineup of our experts tonight. And I'm going to ask each of you to say a bit about what your office does. And General Miller, we'll start with you. Just some brief, exactly what does the Inspector General's office do?
Thank you very much, Senator, and it's my pleasure to speak with you and to your constituents here this evening a little bit about what it is that our office does. Mainly as it pertains to your callers here, we operate the checks and balances for the Department of Human Services in Pennsylvania when it comes to recipient welfare fraud and benefits fraud and all of the categories people might be familiar with, such as food stamps, cash assistance, nursing home assistance, et cetera. And also more broadly, our office also is the kind of the checks and balances for the executive branch. All executive offices or those that report to the governor's office come under our jurisdiction for any kind of fraud, waste, abuse, misuse, or misconduct.
Very good. Thank you. And District Attorney, do you want to talk a bit about what the office does? I think many people will be familiar, but it'd be good to hear it from you.
Sure. When we are talking about tonight's topic. And my office investigates and prosecutes a lot of the credit card scams and the other scams that are taking place too often in our community. And we spend countless hours investigating many of these offenses. One thing that I want to just put out there right away is that one of the reasons we want to have this town hall is to educate everyone so you do not become a victim. Because, quite frankly, it is very difficult to uncover the perpetrators of these scams. Many times they're hiding behind IP addresses that are located in other countries. They're hiding behind telephone numbers that are spoofed, and they're actually living in other countries or somewhere well outside of our jurisdiction. So the biggest lesson that I think we can all learn tonight is how we can prevent ourselves from ever becoming a victim, which in of itself can be tough.
You do make a good point, John, because it's so true. In the many cases that, you know, we have filed complaints, trying to find the perpetrators is just about impossible. And then recovering funds is very, very difficult, if not impossible, too, in many cases. So you make some good points. Now we'll go on to Deputy Attorney General Fresh. Can you talk a little bit about what your office does? It's a large department in state government.
That's true. Yeah, great. Thank you so much for having us tonight. So again, my name is Sarah Frash. I'm the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Attorney General's office under Josh Shapiro. And our section takes consumer complaints on a whole variety of things, whether it be scams like we're talking about today, identity theft, or just general issues like home improvement contractors, car dealers, and whatnot. And what we do with those complaints is we attempt to mediate them. Now, you heard from the district attorney that it's very difficult sometimes to find the perpetrator of a scam. And so we've developed a program that helps victims that maybe we can't go after the bad guy in another country. However, we work with other groups to try and get some sort of refund back, whether it be a retailer who sold a gift card to the victim, or whether it be the bank that allowed the wire to go forward. So we are definitely a resource, and if we can't figure out how to solve the problem, then we refer it to another agency and at least provide some guidance for the victims.
So that's helpful to know that. And maybe we can start with you for the first question. Ms. Frash, how do we know when it's appropriate to file a complaint with the Attorney General? I mean, you know, something, you know, if you get your credit card hacked, I don't know if that's necessarily a time when you call the Attorney General. What are the cases that we, you know, that you think are most appropriate, and how do we do that?
Well, that's a good question. So I would say there's never a situation where you just shouldn't file a complaint where we wouldn't accept a complaint. We accept every complaint. The issue is, can we do anything to help ourselves? And if the answer is no, we will get you to the right place that can. The other reason why I would say you file it with us anyway is we report all of our complaint information to the FTC's Consumer Sentinel, and other law enforcement has access to that database. And so they use that to track trends and patterns and stuff that might be helpful for them. So there's no harm in reporting it to our office. But for when it's an identity theft or something where there's actually a crime that's been committed, we always suggest that the victim report it to their local police as well.
Okay, so you really have to make multiple reports. I think that's a really important thing to talk about, because I know people think, well, once and done, I've reported it to the police, or you know, they call my office and then we get in touch with you. But in reality, you need to make sure that you cover all the bases, right?
That's correct. And it wouldn't hurt to also report it to the FTC. They have a wonderful tool for identity theft, I can give you the website if anybody wants to go there. It's identitytheft.gov. It is a wonderful tool. It will give you all of the tips. It will give you all the steps to help you if you have gotten your identity stolen. Just an amazing, amazing resource.
Again, good advice to know. And people can often call our office and we will direct a complaint. We will help people fill out complaints as well. So if anyone feels like they're not exactly sure what to do, we answer questions like that all the time in our office. So I want people to know that as well. Now I think what I'd like to do is go to General Miller. And General Miller, could you tell us a little bit about how to avoid having your personal information used to file a fraudulent unemployment or welfare claim? And maybe talk a little bit about, exactly, how that happens and, what you are doing to help stop that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. What our office does specifically for the welfare recipient is, and I'll talk a bit about the Department of Human Services. It has a rather robust program where whoever applies, we do everything from a Social Security match, et cetera, to verify identity to make sure that person is who they say they are. But there are occasions where someone may have stolen someone's identity and all of the identifiers are matching and they still receive benefits. Those claims will come to our office for investigation and subsequent prosecution if we can prove them. We file our cases through the local district attorney's offices if we can find a claim. And more recently, in 2019, we had our authority expanded under Act 15 of that year to include specifically enumerated identity theft as one of the charges that we can bring against an individual as it relates to public administration benefits. So if they're falsifying their identity in pursuit of receiving benefits fraudulently, we can charge them not only just for the welfare fraud, but additionally for the identity theft that that entails. We do have occasion to have those cases. We have more often than not, people will steal people's cards themselves, but we also have the occasion where they have stolen the electronic benefit transfer card or the access card. We had a recent case where an individual stole a disabled man's EBT card and used it for 4 years. We charged him with a number of things, but also including identity theft. So those are the things that we try to do to help Pennsylvanians, and obviously this is something that goes through the welfare office, but having thousands of people on welfare benefits, this is one of the services for those individuals, just to rest easy, to know that if their identity is stolen and either someone uses that to apply for benefits, there are constant cross matches on there for both Social Security, income, et cetera, so that we can ensure the identity of that individual, as well as reauthorization processes that DHS has, but that those claims will come to our office eventually, and we'll investigate that, prove the identity of the individual, and hold that person accountable who may have stolen that.
How common is this?
It's not the most common is someone who just fails to report information to our office. But what we are seeing is the more thriving market, and we have taken a very robust approach to combating what is called SNAP trafficking or food stamp trafficking, where people are going and using the EBT card as a commodity at stores and either selling them, exchanging them for money or other illegal things. And where we have actually investigated individuals. One person, you know, that I have in front of me used 15 people's EBT cards in pursuit of that SNAP trafficking scheme for over 3 years. And it totaled about $9,000 in benefits that this individual had trafficked. So we were able to bring, you know, obviously in concert with the local district attorney's office, charges against that individual and hold them accountable for the benefits they stole from that individual. So it is becoming more common as people become more savvy and more understanding of how the EBT card works, which it works just like a debit card. And if they are able to get that PIN from that individual, then they can easily go out and use it. And we'll see that a lot of times where someone, we had one where a person was deceased and their next of kin started using their EBT card to go transact benefits. Obviously, it doesn't affect the individual, but there's the types of schemes that we will see oftentimes if someone is indigent and not aware. Those people are victims, and we will see it in our nursing home facilities where someone will come in and apply for benefits and then start stealing assets away from that individual. We are the entity that will investigate and prosecute those individuals who may have, you know, taken someone's bank account or the person, maybe even their power of attorney. They are not aware that those things are happening, and we will investigate and restore those monies to the individual and then hold the individual accountable.
Okay. Wow. Jessica, I'm going to turn it back to you. Have any calls come in, or can you tell people how to call us?
Yes, we do have a few callers on the line, and a reminder to those that would like to participate in the discussion, you can press *3 on your keypad to submit your question. That is *3. And we can go live with Dorothy, who has a question. Dorothy, you are live with the senator and her guest.
Yes, my question is...
Hi, Dorothy.
Yes, my question is as follows. What do you do when your email has been compromised, hacked?
Two of our experts would be able to help on that. Would that be something, Deputy AG Fresh, that you could help with?
Sure. So the first thing I would suggest is that you change your passwords. And most of the times, we see people use the same password for all their accounts. So you just want to make sure that you are updating all the passwords that you had that was the same. You don't want people getting access to other things. If you can, I know it's difficult because people usually have the same email address for years and years and years, but if you're able to shut down that email and open up a new email account, that would be ideal.
It's a lot of work though, isn't it? Because then, you know, if you're used to getting email messages, personal messages, or even from vendors or, you know, stores or things that you often order things online, you lose all that when you have to change your email address, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why it's super important that you update your passwords frequently. You're making sure that they're, you know, very difficult passwords for people to figure out. You don't store them on your computer. Don't share them with anybody. Because, yeah, that's exactly right. To change your email account, which has so many things associated with it, would be very difficult. But I will tell you, if people hack into your email, they access personal information, they can get bank account information, other financial information, and then they also can send emails from your account pretending to be you. And we've seen that happen before, and unfortunately, people fall for it.
It really, you know, can have a huge impact. You'd think that wasn't something that important, but it could have a great impact. Thanks for that advice. And I think it's probably true that a lot of us use the same password for a multiple number of accounts. And that's probably a good way for something like that to happen, isn't it?
Correct.
And another, Judy, another
sure.
prevention tip is you have to be very careful on the emails you receive to make certain you don't open an email from a source that is unknown, because that email may be sent to you for one purpose only, and that is to obtain your personal information.
That's a really good point. And one thing that I've noticed, John, about those types of emails, sometimes they'll have misspellings or the language just won't sound like, you know, if it's your bank requesting information or it's UPS that says that your package has arrived and you need to call this number, that you kind of get the sense that this isn't correct. Have you seen that as well?
Yes, absolutely.
So you really do have to be vigilant and not give any personal information out.
That is absolutely correct, and that's the most important lesson that I could express to everyone tonight. Do not give your personal information out.
Again, good advice. Jessica, do we have other callers?
Yes, we do. Next we'll go to Tom in Sinking Spring. Tom, you're live.
Hi, thank you.
Hi,
for
Tom.
Taking my call.
Oh, of course.
Hello,
go
Judy?
Ahead, please.
Oh,
yeah,
hello?
I'm here. Go ahead, please. Can
All
you
right.
hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay.
Question for you. Back in, for the panel, back in 2009, I had different credit card companies call me telling me that somebody tried to apply for a credit card on a computer or online, and they asked if it was me. I said no. And they said, we didn't think so because you already have a credit card with us. So, you know, it threw up a flag to them. They said it was being, they said the one credit card company, I forget if it was Visa or MasterCard, said that the credit card was being shipped, it was being sent to an Allentown address. And they actually gave me an address, but I didn't think quick enough to write the address down. And they said, you know, you want to call your credit bureaus and let them know that, you know, somebody has your identity. So, okay. So I got the phone. About a half hour later, I get another phone call from another credit card company. Same thing. Somebody tried to apply for a credit card online. But they wouldn't tell me where that one was being sent. So I ended up calling all three of the credit bureaus and reporting it, and I had to put a block on my account for 7 years, which then made it hard for me. When I would go to do something, I had to prove who I was, so I felt it made me feel more like a criminal than the criminal felt. But I called my local authority and reported everything to them, and, you know, it didn't seem like there was anything they could do about it. And the officer that I talked to from my township, he's like, well, you know, it's really hard to find. I said, well, this is the address. I said, they gave me an address, and it's an Allentown address. I said, can you call the credit card company as an officer and get the information? I said, because I didn't think quick enough to write the address down, because if I would have, I would have went to the address in Allentown myself and took care of the matter. And the cop said, well, you know, it's really hard to find out, you know, this and that, who it does, maybe the person don't live there. Well, if you don't investigate and look into it, how would you know? I mean, why couldn't they call and say, hey, let's, you know, get the information from the credit card company, then call the Allentown police, and then go there and maybe, you know, take a warrant and get the computer system, get the mobile devices, and look on the computers or whatever and see if there is any online activity applying for credit cards. You can delete all the stuff you want, but a computer person, a computer expert, can still go in and find all that information. Even though you delete it, it's always there. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, sounds like a nightmare.
Yes. If the authority don't want to do anything, who else do you call to report it to? And then the second thing, I get a lot of spam stuff on my mobile device. And this is, I'm just going to give a tip for you or for any other listeners out there. I have AT&T for my mobile device, and I keep getting a, you know, it's a 1 and then an area code and then the 7-digit number. And it says, your PIN or your passcode is being changed, you know, blah, 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 you know, click here to take care of it. So I actually called AT&T up, and AT&T said, if it comes from a phone number, that is scam or spam. He said, whenever we send you a message, he goes, matter of fact, I'm going to send you a message right now. And it was just a 5-digit number. So if it is actually coming from like AT&T, like if you have AT&T for your mobile device, if they send you a message, it will only be like a 5-digit number. If it looks like an actual phone number, just disregard it. It's not
okay.
Accurate.
That's good. Thank you. That's good to know. So Tom, hang on. So maybe our guests can address this. I think a couple of you could probably talk about it. I think just to summarize it, Tom's saying, these things sometimes don't seem to be investigated. Why don't we start with you, District Attorney Adams?
I hear you, Tom, and I couldn't agree more. I can tell you that a lot of times when we have what I call identity theft issues, they are not followed up by local law enforcement. Basically, law enforcement has found themselves in a situation where they would be spinning their wheels. And because you got an address, that doesn't mean anything. That address may just be a fake address. So the fact that you got an address, it would not be sufficient to obtain like a search warrant or anything for devices that were in that address. There needs to be a lot more follow-up. And frankly, law enforcement is probably going to take the position that until there's a financial loss and a substantial financial loss, the follow-up is not going to happen. Now, I think in the situation that you talked about, your number one defense is to contact the credit card companies, make certain that they are aware that that is fraudulent, and they should not be issuing a credit card to that address. It is absolutely they need to do their job to avoid fraud from taking place. And I hear you, and I sympathize with you because I myself have been a victim. And tracing identity theft is somewhat next to, it's very difficult, to say the least.
I think you were mentioning that earlier, John, that's the case. Deputy AG Fresh, anything you want to add to that?
One of the other purposes of filing that police report, besides trying to get relief and an investigation and try and catch the bad guy, is a lot of times the credit card companies and other companies that you're trying to show identity theft to require proof of a police report. So I know that, that's one step that they're going to ask for to show that something was identity theft result, as opposed to, this was your charge and they're trying to collect on it. So that's just another important reason why you should continue to report those.
Absolutely correct. And a lot of times then the credit card companies will request, or they'll prepare an affidavit of fraud, which in the long run, if some fraudulent activity takes place, protects you. So, great point.
This is all very helpful. Anything that you want to add, Inspector General Miller?
Yeah, we certainly, that's a tough situation to be in from the welfare fraud side of it. Obviously, if we were to identify someone whose benefits were either applied for or used under someone else's identification, we would be able to supply the individual with that criminal complaint that we would file as proof of that, of any kind of fraudulent activity in their name, so that they might be able to use that, at least alerts them to check other accounts.
Good point as well. And in terms of, contacting the credit companies, the companies that, look at your financial standing, if you freeze your credit, as Tom mentioned, that can be problematic too. If you go to, buy a car or get a mortgage or something like that, they'll come back to you and say, we can't access your information. So you need to be aware that you've done it. You can do it, but don't forget that you did do it in case you do wish to open a new card or, as I said, try to buy a car or something. get a loan, anything of that nature. Jessica, do we have any other calls coming in?
Yep, we do. We have Catherine from Reading. Catherine, you're live.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello, this is Catherine.
Hello.
I've been scammed a lot. I go on Facebook a lot, and I know I shouldn't, but there was a puppy on there, and they wanted money put down on it, and I did it as an idiot. So I don't know what to do, you know. I called up a lawyer, and he said I would have to take them to small claims court, but how do I know if they're real, you know, these
mm-hmm.
people?
I'll hand that over to our panel. I'm sorry that happened to you, first of all.
Well, again, when I always, and I will tell everyone, you have to be very cautious when you're doing anything online. And I will tell you that you need to be extremely cautious when you are purchasing something from anything online, especially when it's through Facebook or some of the other social media avenues that are out there. You need to be careful because, frankly, from my perspective, everything is a scam. Now, I know I'm a little more protective because of the things that I see day in and day out, but I believe that unless you're dealing with a company that you know of, you have to be extremely careful when you're doing anything online, so that you need to utilize PayPal or some of those other protective type of payment venues, but even that can lead to a scam. So you need to be very careful because, quite frankly, you probably have no idea who you're dealing with, and I think there's got to be a better method than to sending money because you saw someone on Facebook. Don't do it. Prevention is the utmost important thing, because I think that social media is just rabid with fraud and scams.
A.G. Frash, anything to add there, or General Miller?
I had a question. How did you pay the person for the puppy?
Still on, Catherine? I don't know.
We lost the line for Catherine.
Oh, okay. That's too bad.
For the other listeners, you know, if you pay by, we heard PayPal or some of the other payment ways, maybe Venmo, certainly credit cards, there are ways that you can dispute the charges, and hopefully you can get your money back that way. But like we heard, you definitely want to do your research first. I would say not every single ad on Facebook is going to be a scam. There are some legitimate marketplace ads. But that being said, before you make any purchases, you really should be looking into who it is that you're purchasing from. Make sure you're protecting yourself. Do some research. Make sure that there are reviews, verified reviews of whoever made purchases before. Ask for pictures. Ask for records. And we would say for puppies, you don't want to pay for a puppy until you've actually seen it in person.
We actually have Catherine back on the line, so I could put her live again. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am. Okay.
Hi, Catherine. This is Sarah Fresh. I was asking how you actually paid for the puppy.
All right, with an Amazon card.
A gift card. Okay, so let me tell you about gift cards. If anybody wants you to pay for something in a gift card, it is a scam. Gift cards are for gifts, not for paying for things. So if somebody says, I'll sell you this and you get me gift cards, or you need to pay your taxes with the gift cards, or we're going to arrest you unless you get these gift cards, or, you know, somebody's sick, I need you to go shopping for me and get gift cards, that is a scam. So just remember that.
Number. And I thought, well, since they gave me the phone number, it would be all right.
And Catherine, you can file a complaint with our office, and we can see if we can help you. We've done a lot of good work in the gift card scam arena.
I hope that's helpful, Catherine.
Where would I go to get you?
You have access to the internet, so you would go to our website, www.attorneygeneral.gov.
G-O-V, okay.
G-O-V, V as in Victor.
Okay. Right, thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing that, because I think that's a good example. And I'm glad that you brought up the gift cards. I'm glad you asked that question, Ms. Frasch, excuse me, because gift cards are also another area that are somewhat problematic, aren't they?
Yeah, I think scammers were trying to figure out how to get money transmitted to them in a way that was easy for them to hide. And unfortunately, a lot of people have fallen victim to it. There's still a lot of work to do in that area, but hopefully we get the message out. Gift cards are for gifts, and that's it.
Understood. So we'll go back to you, Jessica. More questions?
Yes, we have more questions. We actually have an online question. A caller wanted the panel to talk about two-factor authentication and the value of placing a freeze on your credit report.
Open it to everybody, anybody who wants to answer.
So this is Sarah again. For the two-factor authentication, that goes beyond just typing in your username and password. So if a site has that available, which they should, it's a really good way to make sure that you are who you say you are. And there's other best practices out there to make sure that people are really making sure they're dealing with who the person says they are. Make sure if you're selecting questions and answers for yourself when you're setting up the accounts that you know the answers to your questions, because that could be difficult too. I know I've had a difficult time remembering the answers I chose. But anytime you can build extra ways to identify yourself on a site is really good. And that's what I would have to offer there.
And sometimes you have the option of whether you want to use that dual, you know, authentication and, you know, choose it, as you said, because that does make sure that, you know, it's more secure for you. There was a second part to that question. I can't remember what it was. Do you remember, Jessica?
It was the credit freezes, right?
Yep.
Credit freezes.
The value of
credit
freezes.
Yeah, if you don't, I think we talked about this a little bit. If you don't intend to apply for new credit and things like that, then freezing your credit could help so that new accounts can't be opened.
We got some questions that were pre-submitted and that I'd like to ask right now. Lee in Reading was asking specifically to you, Inspector General Miller, why doesn't the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs have an Inspector General's office to investigate Act 66 Veteran Service Officer complaints or other complaints of fraud or abuse in regards to, you know, veteran benefits and the protection of whistleblowers in Pennsylvania?
The DMVA does fall under the jurisdiction of our agency from on our other side of the office that does internal investigations under the governor's, for agencies under the governor's jurisdiction. This specific complaint that the individual is talking about, I don't know if that would specifically fall under, you know, DMVA is a hybrid federal state-run agency that may fall
right.
under an inspector general for the Army. So that might be the best place, but as in the other panelists here, if that the individual were to file that complaint with our office, we would find the correct home for it to go. If that was indeed the United States Army's Inspector General or wherever, we would try to find that individual the very venue.
Okay. And what do you do in terms of protecting whistleblowers from intimidations or, you know, a threat of firing or something of that nature within those investigations?
Sure. The whistleblower law in Pennsylvania does provide protection for those individuals. So simply filing that complaint with our office would allow those individuals to ensure that they're not going to get, you know, discharged, threatened, any form of discrimination. It is a layer of protection for them. It specifically prohibits any kind of wrongful termination as a result. So if it is indeed something that is born out of a complaint regarding their workplace and that is made to our office, say they're reporting suspected fraud or misuse within the agency itself, they would then be covered under that whistleblower protection.
Okay. So if he calls back and asks for more specific information, perhaps we can refer him to your office as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. It sounds like this might be a personal kind of situation. I'm not exactly sure. Another question that I wanted to get to, because I think this is important, and this came on online as well, and the questions from John in Burn Township. For older people who aren't as technology savvy, what can we do to monitor our bank accounts and get notifications about potential scams involving our personal information? Anybody want to tackle that
well,
one?
Well, I think that's a difficult question because, unfortunately, most of the ways to monitor your bank accounts are through getting notices regarding activity in your account, which you're going
mm-hmm.
to be able to access only through computer or through an app. So I think that, unfortunately, some technology has to be involved. I'm not certain of any capability of our financial institutions to provide notices any other way unless they have some sort of telephonic ways to notify people. But again, a lot of scams that take place, they start with the telephone. So
yeah.
I don't trust
yeah.
the telephone whatsoever.
Just for a moment, I want to say I know that A.G. Frosch has to leave. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Really appreciate your help. So if we have any questions that need to be answered by the AG's office as we continue on our call here tonight, we'll make sure they get forwarded to her. John, I think you make a really important point, but I know that you can, in many cases, call the bank, and they have automated lines that will give you your balance and things of that nature. But other than that, it's difficult. I agree.
Yeah. And
okay.
It's technology is how you access.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right. So we've all got to somehow get in the groove on that, I suppose, to a certain degree, or get somebody to help us.
Yeah.
If that's somebody that you trust to help you access that information. Emphasis on trust. So, Jessica, do we have more questions on the line?
Yes, we do. We have Joanne from Reading. Joanne, you're live.
Hi, Joanne.
Yes, this is not fraud. One question I have is, how can you stop all them spam calls? I get anywhere from 13 to 20 calls a day.
I think there's a lot of people on this call tonight that will echo the same complaint. Joanne, that seems to be universal. And that kind of leads to one of the questions that we actually got, submitted earlier, too, that people have added their numbers to a do not call list, but they still keep calling. Any advice from our panel on how to deal with that?
Well, I will tell everyone, we're all subject to that. And I get spam calls on my home phone. I get spam calls on my cell phone. And it's a battle. It's a battle. And despite the fact that we have these do not call lists, they still keep coming. I think that you should try to report to the Office of Attorney General the calls that you get from the numbers, and maybe something can be done. But it's a problem for everyone.
As a practical note, if I don't recognize a number, I don't pick it up. I have a landline, and I also have a cell phone. And at least through my cell phone carrier, if the call is spam, it actually comes up as a spam number. So I just don't pick those up, for sure. And that seems to be fairly reliable. I don't know if that problem is more on a landline for people, but it seems to me that my landline is really, that's a lot of problems with that. It's constant.
Yeah,
about some more questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it certainly isn't in my bailiwick, but I know just from personal experience, I'll get the spam calls on my work cell as well as my personal cell, and it does have a pretty robust spam blocking feature. So just be diligent there, too, if you get something that you know to be spam, to add it to your spam blocking on your mobile device.
One of the things that people will tell me, you give them the advice to block calls, but these particular, companies seem to work. They just have another number. They're just more numbers that they punch in and use. And it's automatic dialing, so it's hard to fight against the machine. So probably the best thing to do is just not pick up unless you know the number.
Exactly.
And if somebody really needs to get you, they'll leave a message, right? So we haven't found a really good way, and although we continue to pass laws to try to deal with this, it just seems like the fraudsters are outsmarting us, unfortunately. Let's go to another call. Jessica, do you have anything there?
Yep, we have Keith. Keith, you are live.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Keith.
I have something that happened about 3-4 years ago. I got a check in the mail, $7,800, and it said, winner, you won this. So I took it to my bank, and I talked to the lady in the bank. I didn't cash it yet. So I showed her this in her office, and there was an address and a phone number on the check. So she put us two on the speakerphone, and she called that number. And the guy picked up, and he spoke broken English. So anyways, the lady said to him, I received this check, told him the amount, and then he said right away, well, just cash it. It's good. So this is what happens. It's only happened to me once. I still have the check. So.
But you didn't cash it.
Nope. There's a problem, man. You cash that check, they get into your bank account somehow or other, and you're responsible for that $7,000 or whatever it is to repay the bank. Because you cashed that check. So what I'm saying is, before you ever do that, go to your bank. You sit down with somebody that knows what they're doing in the bank. And it looked legit. She said, yeah, mm-hmm. It looks good. So if you... She called that number, and I heard the guy talking. He didn't sound English or nothing, but he spoke pretty good. I understood what he's saying. He said something like, yeah, it's a good check. Just cash it. So,
let's go to the district attorney. What are your thoughts on that, John? Do you see cases like Keith's talking about?
My general thought is, and I've said this time and time again, if it's too good to be true, it's not true. And the lesson there is there are all kinds of scams, and I think you hit the nail on the head. They were probably trying to get your bank account information. That is a problem. That's a very unusual problem that they're sending a check in that amount. And it's I wouldn't doubt that check was actually fraudulent and that eventually that check would come back as a fraudulent check. Matter of fact, I would almost bet my bottom dollar that was a fraudulent check and it was a scam to obtain your bank account information.
Well, it's good that you got you were smart, savvy about this, Keith, and went to the bank. That's good advice. Glad that you shared that with us, Jessica. Do we have any other calls?
We have.
I think we can do one more.
Yep, mm-hmm. We're going to do one online question, and then we'll wrap up for the evening. Sandy.
Okay.
Wanted to know, how has COVID changed scams, and are there more scams since the pandemic began?
I can answer that.
Okay,
scams,
go for it.
Scams have increased immensely through COVID. I talked about this earlier today on another program. We are seeing a change in the dynamics of crime. You know, years ago, the crimes that occurred in our community, many of the crimes were burglaries and robberies. Our burglaries and robberies have dropped considerably. But our credit card frauds, our scams have increased exponentially throughout, before COVID and throughout COVID. It is clearly the crime that is now popular with the criminals. They're operating their schemes from behind a computer screen, through a telephone, and they're not committing crimes like breaking into a house or robbing someone at a store. They're utilizing the internet, the telephone, to steal money. So those type of crimes have increased immensely through COVID, and that continues. And that trend, I think, will continue. And we need to be careful and to protect ourselves, to prevent ourselves from becoming a victim.
That's good parting advice. Thanks, John. I appreciate hearing that. And, when you think about it, people using a computer is a lot more productive probably than burglary, and a lot easier in terms of, getting money from people or getting, their goods. So it seems to make sense. It's unfortunate. And just to kind of wrap up too, Inspector General Miller, any parting thoughts for us tonight? And thank you too, most certainly, for being with us.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. My thought on the last point was that while our office doesn't investigate unemployment compensation fraud directly, I can speak to the fact that the Department of Labor and Industry has seen an uptick in the number of fraud claims for people who are applying for unemployment compensation fraudulently. And they do have a mechanism and a fraud team there that review all of those claims to ensure that benefits are being delivered to the appropriate individual. So, and if there are any issues, then they refer that out to the local police for prosecution. But overall, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to the panelists, or to the fellow panelists, yourself, and to your constituents, and I appreciate their interest in stopping this type of fraud in the Commonwealth.
No, thank you very much, and to everybody who's participated on our telephone town hall, thank you, and I hope this has been helpful. And again, our guests tonight were State Inspector General Miller, District Attorney Adams, Berks District Attorney Adams, and the Chief Deputy Attorney General Frasch. From Attorney General Shapiro's office. So we had a pretty good, panel of experts here. And again, if people have, more questions and didn't get their question answered tonight or need further information, feel free to call our office at 610-929-2151. We're here to help you as well, and we'll get you to the right answers as best as we can. So thank you. Thank you all very much for participating with us. And I'll turn it back to Jessica.
Yes, thank you, Senator. Just a final thank you to everyone that joined us tonight for Senator Judy Schwenk's telephone town hall. You have been a fantastic audience. Have a great night.